From the heart of Big Ten country, Los Angeles, California, Ryan Abraham and David Woods present the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together, we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Big Ten football, as David pointed out before we started rolling, before we started the show. College football season is still going on. Yes, good thing we cover the Big Ten, David, because there's still two teams left. We got to recap one of the games, the Duke Mayo Bowl, PJ Fleck, Minnesota. Can they win their eighth bowl game in a row?
Isn't it the Duke's Mayo Bowl?
Duke's? Did I say Duke? Duke's
Mayo Bowl.
Duke's.
Duke Mayo, as if that's a person.
Ah, Duke Mayo. That would be a good, like, action hero.
Yeah.
Duke Mayo.
Like Duke Nukem and Duke Mayo.
Nice. But yeah, we still got two games to preview because the college football playoffs are coming up tomorrow, Thursday. We're recording this on Wednesday. And also on Friday. And we got two Big Ten teams involved in that. So we're going to preview that. We'll recap the Duke's Mayo Bowl and then answer any questions you have. You can email us questions, big10cast@gmail.com. You can also call or text us at 424-532-0678. And you can tweet us at B1G Podcast. And we are live right now on our YouTube channel, Podcast of Champions, so make sure you check that out. There are already a bunch of comments. I will look at your comments and try to put them up on the screen as we go. Thank you for doing that.
Do you have any pictures from your colonoscopy to share with us?
No, I didn't take any.
Do you feel cleaned out? Do you feel like an empty vessel?
I feel like I had a super cleanse or something.
Yeah.
We were going to record yesterday, but I had my colonoscopy yesterday, which if you guys haven't done those for a while, you should do one if you're like old like
me. Just for a good time, frankly.
Just for a good time. This one's a lot faster. I did one like years ago, and I remember like you had to sit there and wait for a while afterwards. Like, man, as soon as I woke up, they had like called my ride. 10 minutes, he'll be out of here. And I sort of like came out of the anesthesia pretty quickly and like walked out of there. And it was like, wow. Maybe it's like technology is better.
Maybe. Maybe.
Yeah. But you got to drink the stuff.
Yeah.
It's pretty bad. I added liquid IV, like lemon lime to it, a little bit of that. You know, it's like the hangover stuff. And it actually made it better, but it was like a gallon of that stuff. If anyone's listening and you're close by, I have an extra gallon of that. Like, I forget what it's called. But if you're going to get a colonoscopy, I have an extra
one. You got a 2-for-1 deal on your colonoscopy juice?
I think they just accidentally gave me an extra prescription for it, and it's free. So they're like, do you need the second one? I'm like, I don't know, they didn't say, so I just took it.
Should we just take it for a good time? Should we just drink it?
I don't know if that's a good time. I had to wake up, my appointment's 7:30. I had to wake up at 3:30 in the morning to start drinking it again. Like, you drink it the night before, plus you don't eat. For me, not eating for a whole day, that's kind of crappy. No pun intended.
A lot of crap. There's a lot of crap.
Yes, we didn't have to go there, but here we are. Some people
Hey, look, I just like to let people know what's going on with us.
That's why we didn't record earlier.
Yeah.
But go get one. Go get it checked out. I had a few polyps.
Go. All right. It's mostly a dude listenership. Ladies, I know you're out there, but it's mostly a dude listenership. First, colonoscopies. Get them regularly. Second, go get your PSA tests. All right.
I probably need to do that.
That's for your chance of prostate cancer. Look, all men, you're going to get something going on with your prostate at some point late in life. Start getting PSAs like when you're like 40 or something like that. Go look at a doctor recommendation, but like start at 40. Who cares? Okay. Who cares about the recommendation? So you have a baseline, because your baseline might be kind of high, and a high is like 2, but it might be kind of high. So then if you're a 3 when you're like 65, it's like, oh, okay, no big deal. But if it's not kind of high, if it's like a 0 and then it's a 4 when you're 60, that might be a big deal. So get your PSAs now. First, you might catch something early, and that's great with prostate cancer because it's eminently treatable if you catch it early. But second, you'll have some information that doctors can use later on when they're determining whether you are in the midst of some sort of growth of prostate cancer.
Great stuff.
There you go.
Yeah, I should do that too, though. I'll ask my next time because I have a history in the family, so I need to go check that out. All right. Well, there's your public service.
Yeah, health. That's what we do here for you.
We're trying to help you everyone's health out there. You know what's also healthy? To leave us a review, a 5-star review over on the Apple Podcasting app. Spotify's great. You can leave a 5-star rating. There's no reviews there yet that I know of. And if that's changed, let me know. But on Apple, what we do is we got some gift cards thanks to our sponsor, Trader Joe's, or well, the Peristyle Podcast. But John Abreu, who's an avid listener to the Podcast of Champions, sent me a bunch of new gift cards for Trader Joe's. These are $42 ones because Ohio State put up 42 big ones on Tennessee. And we'll pick the best one every week and send you a gift card. There's a couple emails I received. Email me, ryan@uscfootball.com. And I owe a couple gift cards, so I'll send those out now. But do we have any new reviews, David?
We do. We have 3 new reviews.
Okay.
One is from GG_K45, just passing by, 5-star review. Can we give them a round of applause for their Big Ten knowledge and for me for finally figuring out how to leave a review? There you go. Such an interesting mix of football analysis with Naked and Afraid, Christmas movies and songs, etc. Should I half expect a quiz on conference history or bowl knowledge? Said the educator with ill football knowledge, but could use the gift card to replenish my student food stash. All right.
I think we have to replenish your food.
I think we do. Yeah. I think that's fair. You assumed a woman.
I know it is, so yes.
Oh, wow. Look at you. All right. This is from Osito.
I got an email saying about it. Yeah.
888. Once more unto the breach, dear friends. This person has tried to leave this review several times. It's a good one, so I will read it. No one. Do you know Ryan and David from the Podcast of Champions? Me. You mean the two guys that spent the first 10 minutes of a podcast discussing home pest control instead of UW's appearance in the national championship game in the last year of the Pac-12? Yeah, I know them. No one. What can you tell me about Ryan Abraham? Me. From what I gather, he's a divorced booze hound who spends an inordinate amount of time of weekends in Vegas gambling, who then goes to the gym to burn off all the dead calories he consumed from pounding cheap beer and liquor. Worse still is that he is an SC grad, unlike David, a fellow Bruin, and thus a graduate from my most hated rival university. That all checks out.
Yeah, thanks.
No one. Wow, that's a lot to digest. Sounds like you must listen to the show because of David, your fellow UCLA grad. He must be a great guy, right? Me. Let me put it this way. I'd rather listen to Ryan discuss home pest control while we both drink cheap beer and alternate between watching replays of the mid-2000s USC teams and Chip Kelly UCLA squads playing Fresno State than listen to even one pedantic take or other verbose musing that emanates from David's bearded mug. I think that's all you need to know. Keep it mediocre, fellas. 5 stars. That's a gift card winner right there. That's
definitely a gift card. Yeah. Holy crap.
And then we have 5 stars nevermore. This is We've Been Served. I think he has posted the entire poem of The Raven, which is much longer than I thought it was. I'll give you a few stanzas.
Wow.
Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered weak and weary over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore, while I nodded nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping, as of someone gently rapping at my chamber door. "'Tis some visitor," I muttered, "tapping at my chamber door, only this and nothing more." Ah, distinctly I remember it was in the bleak December, and each separate dying ember wrought its ghost upon the floor. Eagerly I wished the morrow, vainly I had sought to borrow, from my book's surcease of sorrow for the lost Lenore, for the rare and radiant maiden whom the angels name Lenore, nameless here forevermore. And the silken, sad, uncertain rustling of each purple curtain thrilled me, filled me with fantastic terrors never felt before, so that now, to still the beating of my heart, I stood repeating, 'tis some visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door, some late visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door. This it is, and nothing more. We'll stop there.
Yeah, that's excellent read.
But the entirety of The Raven is now in our iTunes Apple reviews. So if you would like to refamiliarize yourself with it, go right ahead. I was waiting for like some bit where it was like
that he starts like putting in like
something, you know, about Dan Lanning, the show or the college football or whatever. But there's nothing. It's just
it's literally copy and paste.
It's just The Raven, which is cool. It's a good poem.
There's a funny Simpsons like episode where they like.
I was doing it in the cadence of the way it is said in that Simpsons episode.
Yes, I felt that you were doing that. Where like Bart's like, I thought they're supposed to be scary. And Lisa's like, I think people were easier to scare back then or something. I don't know. It's like, yeah, it doesn't seem very scary. But
yeah, it was one of the Treehouse of Horrors, I think.
Yeah, one of those cool ones. Quoteth of the day, huge ass. Okay. Yeah. Thanks.
All right. So I think we've got, who are we giving gift cards to? Gigi.
And the second one? Yeah, right, yeah. So email me, Ryan, at uscfootball.com. And yeah, that's cool. You know, so yeah, Gigi, I got was in contact with her. Hopefully they're okay up there. And everyone, if you're affected by the fires and stuff, Kyle says, hope everyone's okay. Yeah, like it's crazy here in Southern California right now. But teaches kids in Santa Monica, or what is like a counselor for kids in Santa Monica. And yeah, a lot of them that are trying to figure out their life, and they need to come place and have snacks and stuff. So we'll give you a gift card, and you can help out the students that you help out every day that I think she pays for out of her own pocket to help them out. So we'll send you a gift card. Yeah. And man, the fires are crazy. So hopefully everyone's okay. It's nuts. We're both David and I are south of where the fires are and stuff. So we can
see. Yeah, no, we're just dealing with air quality, but that's nothing. Now I've had one friend whose house burned down, and another one who had to evacuate this morning in Altadena, because there's multiple fires. It's not just the one. The Palisades one is particularly devastating. That's burned down, I mean, a ton of the Pacific Palisades. Like, I don't know if anybody's ever been up that area, but basically going up to Temescal Canyon, if you've ever been hiking in Temescal Canyon, that whole area up Sunset driving that way is burned. Like, it's, I saw a video this morning of, like, right by the fire station, and it's like the entire road going north on Sunset after that bend west of the 405, it's gone. It's crazy.
It's nuts. Tony wanted to know, how close is it getting to UCLA?
It's from a distance standpoint, it's pretty close. I think the danger to UCLA is pretty minimal.
Air quality is bad, though, I think.
Air quality was not bad yesterday. The wind was blowing in the appropriate direction, and I don't know if it's bad today. But it's, I mean, it's only a couple of miles away, the fire. It's just, it would have to jump, you know, several miles of concrete and freeways to, you know, really affect UCLA. That's actually, Westwood is where the evacuation center was, at least yesterday, for a lot of the evacuees from the Palisades.
Yeah. It's nuts, but people are like from all over the country sending texts and things like, are you okay? Like, yeah, we're here at the beach, like concrete everywhere. So it's not too bad.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing with El Segundo for us is, I mean, the airport would have to burn down for El Segundo to go south. I mean, it would have to be, I mean, I guess on Pershing, there's some, you know, brush over there, but it's a small area, small concentration. So yeah. No, it's hard for this area to burn down, but the Palisades, if you don't know the area very well, there's a ton of, like, essentially just forest, like, directly north of it, like Will Rogers State Park, Topanga, Temescal, that whole area. So when that burns, and if it burns really fast and abruptly with heavy winds, it can quickly get pretty devastating.
And it's tough because it's like a, you know, a wilderness fire that goes into neighborhoods, and then firefighters, trying to fight fires with the fire hydrants in the neighborhoods for a wilderness fire. It's supposed to be for one house, not for blocks and blocks of houses. I mean, thousands of homes. It's insane.
Well, and yeah, and there's been, you know, piles of cars trying to evacuate, and people were advised to leave their cars and just get out at one point yesterday. So also cars just blocking the road when they're trying to fight the fire. I think it's still 0% contained.
Yeah.
So obviously super devastating for a ton of people in the area.
Kyle wanted to know, is the Rose Bowl in danger? So
the Rose Bowl, that whole area was just evacuated.
Yeah, like Altadena, which is next to Pasadena, I think north of Pasadena, essentially. Like that's where one of the
The Eaton Fire. Eaton Fire, yeah, my buddy, he had to evacuate his house this morning from that one. But yeah, the Rose Bowl just had an evacuation order, I think like an hour ago. So again, the Rose Bowl burning down, I think that's very unlikely. First, it's surrounded by a golf course, and golf courses aren't going to burn super well. But then also, it's a big pile of concrete. So you wouldn't think that would be too much in danger. But again, surrounding area, a lot of homes. and a lot of trees. So, it's pretty devastating. I think this is going to be one of the most devastating disasters in LA history. It's probably already there. I mean, from the amount of money, we won't have a human toll for a long time, I imagine, but the amount of devastation financially for a bunch of people is going to be tremendous.
To see like restaurants and homes and everything, I mean, that this many homes destroyed is absolutely, it's crazy. You couldn't even see because the winds were so high. That was the big problem. There weren't any aircraft. So usually you get all these aircraft views, and you're getting all the stuff on the ground where you'd see a reporter, you know, with fires behind them and talking about things going on. This morning, though, when things cleared up, and the president of the United States is in town, so they'd closed the airspace, so you couldn't fly things. So they started to fly some helicopters, and you get to see some overhead views, which is just insane. So you're going to see more of that. Just one of the reporters like drove down, you know, PCH like in Malibu, and was just, and I remember like when I was at USC and the riots happened, when I came back, USC was fine, but everything around it, all the stores and everything, were burnt down. And it reminded me of that, where there's just like some beams and just husks, you know, just everything just kind of burnt to the ground. So much stuff around the USC area did that. So that kind of gave me that reminder of like, whoa, this just looks like it's like a bomb went off or something.
Yeah. No, if you look at it, it's just a bunch of, husks of buildings all throughout the Palisades right now. It's unlike anything I've ever seen in this area. Obviously, yeah. We've seen, you know, pictures of devastation. It's just, you know, it's the personal context when it's a place you've been, when it's a place you've kind of, you know, spent a lot of time. It's surreal.
Yeah, your friends on Facebook are like, hey, I'm safe, or hey, we evacuated. You're like, man, it's right there. It's
no, surreal. I mean, the number of people who've had to evacuate. Like, I've got a buddy who lives on 14th Street in Santa Monica on Santa Monica Boulevard. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, it's in the middle of Santa Monica. But the evacuation order is for like 8 blocks north of him.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're in the middle of Santa Monica and you have to like, it's just crazy because you think of LA as just this concrete city, you know, where it's, you know, come on. Can't really burn down, not in modern times, but it's burning stuff that I never would have thought, you know, ever would have gotten this extreme. Real confluence of events. I mean, the high winds, you know, it's in some of these areas it's like hurricane force winds that are driving how crazy this thing has gotten.
Tony says Fox Weather is reporting 22,000 acres burned, including 4 separate fires. Yeah. The two big ones are the Eaton and then the Palisades one. And then there's 2 more a little bit north on the Palisades side, 2 smaller fires. But yeah, there's just the acreage has kept going up. The containment is not there.
Yeah. And I mean, we had like, I don't know, it was probably 8 of the driest months in, you know, SoCal history the last 8 months. Like, we have not had rain any considerable amount since, I don't know, like May of last year, something like that. So it's just so many things combining to make this particularly devastating.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's a lot. We get a lot of stuff. We went from colonoscopies to fires to
look at us,
all kinds of stuff. We got a game to recap.
We do.
I'm going to leave you guys with an image, David. I'm going to put this on the screen if you can see. PJ Fleck,
yeah, baby.
Yeah, getting absolutely doused in mayo. He took a double shot of it, and he said if there was, I think, like 17 of those barrels, he would have taken them all. He was very happy. Big win. So let's recap that game. We have
Minnesota Golden Gophers.
They were taking on the Virginia Tech Hokies. Again, remind me, a rooster.
No, it's like a turkey.
But still. Oh, gobble gobble? Is that what
we're
doing?
Yeah, I think it's more of a gobble. Yeah.
All right, gobble gobble. Minnesota beat Virginia Tech 24-10 in the Duke's Mayo Bowl, capping off a truly and completely successful season for Minnesota. It is not worth it to agonize over how close they were to double-digit wins. And, like, again, if you look at their schedule, it is crazy how close they were to like a playoff bid. Like, the number of points they were away from it is not actually that many. But still a very clearly successful season for Minnesota. They figured out in a large way their offensive issues from the previous year. Max Brosmer, again, kind of capping off a season where he provided competent quarterback play, which is a big relief for Minnesota fans after last season, played well. He threw one pick late, but he played really well, mostly efficient football. Darius Taylor, I know there was some critique of the running game at different points in the year, but I think on balance, this turned out to be a very efficient rushing attack, and Darius Taylor ended up, again, having a pretty good season. He was 20 for 113 yards. Minnesota really took control of this one in the second quarter, scored 21 points. Then they were 21-10 going into halftime, and they just didn't allow Virginia Tech to really do anything offensively, yeah, especially after halftime, but really this whole game. I mean, the Hokies finished with 149 passing yards and 74 rushing yards on 48 plays. That's not good. There wasn't really a consistent rushing attack at all for them. And Minnesota's defense, I thought, came to play in a major way. But I thought it was a good showcase for kind of all of, you know, Minnesota's best players. You know, Darius Taylor, I thought, played well. I thought Max Brosmer played well. And I thought Elijah Spencer, in, I believe this will be his last game. I think he's a senior. I don't know if he has another year left, but, in his last game, you know, went for 80 plus yards. It was a good team. This is a good Minnesota team. Big question will be, you know, whether they can sustain this next year. But I think there was some talk about PJ Fleck coming into the year, like concerns about his job status and everything. I think he answered that pretty definitively where, you know, there was concern. Have guys gotten tired of the row the boat? Have they gotten tired? Has that message just kind of gotten tired with guys? But pretty much every game this year, I saw a really motivated Minnesota team that was inches away again from having a truly great season, and they still had a very good one. So good on Minnesota for finishing off the year strong.
Yeah, if you would have talked about like the, you know, PJ Fleck of the world, were you like, well, Luke Fickell, or I mean, he kind of separated himself from some of those guys that were like, oh, are they going to be, you know, are they going to have a questionable year? I mean, I thought they had a pretty strong showing all season. He was very excited to get this win. I think it's the eighth straight bowl win for Minnesota and his sixth in a row. Elijah Spencer ends up being, I believe, the MVP. He had six catches, two touchdowns, 81 yards, and he's from Charlotte, where the game's played. So he played two seasons for the 49ers there. We talked about this previewing. Virginia Tech had a lot of opt-outs. I think going into the game, it ended up being 14 starters were gone. So seven on offense, seven on defense. So you knew that was going to be trouble. And, you know, Minnesota just, they had a good second quarter, and outside of that, just sort of hung on and didn't really need to do much. We both took the Golden Gophers -8.5, and we both got it right. So that was our only pick of this last week. And it, you know, it felt like Minnesota could have did more, but really there wasn't much Virginia Tech could do, you know, not scoring after halftime. They took that 7-0 lead. They swapped between quarterbacks trying to figure some stuff out. Bunch of three and outs. It was just kind of like, blech. It just wasn't good. And the head coach ended up getting like a 15-yard penalty for running like way out of the box to complain about a call. Was it Pry? So, yep, whatever. So, good win for Minnesota. Another win for the Big Ten, which is cool. David, that you are now one game under 500, 69-70-1.
Nice.
I'm 13 over. I'm 76-63. And one, we have two games left to pick. So,
all right. Do you have the heat on?
I do have the heat on. Yeah.
Are you insane?
What? It was cold in here when I got in.
It's hot now.
Well, I can turn it off.
All right, you turn it off.
Is there anything else you want to complain about, or what's the?
No.
Yes, there's always something.
There's always something. But right now, no. I'm perfectly content, except I'm going to be sweating in a second.
All right. Cool. Anything else on the game? PJ Fleck?
No, I think for Minnesota fans, you got to be, I think if you had concerns, I think you have to be pretty, pretty pleased now. This is, again, a very good season. And like, just to go through it again, like they were a missed field goal against North Carolina. That weird thing at the end of Michigan where the call didn't go in their favor, 7 points against Rutgers and 1 point against Penn State. Like, this was very close to an elite season. And I think it's just, it's worthwhile to acknowledge that. Of course, there's the flip side where, you know, if UCLA goes for it on fourth down instead of punting it away, maybe they win that game and Minnesota loses. But I think more went against them in close games than for them. And I think, you know, it's worth acknowledging that this could have gone a different way in a much more, in an even more positive direction.
Matthew says, coming from a Wisconsin fan, Fleck is the best coach Minnesota has had in a very long time.
Yeah.
And then Tony says, Fleck is sixth on the Gophers' all-time wins list in 8 years. So that's not bad.
Pretty awesome.
And he also says that the administration loves Fleck. You could see him being there 20 years or more. So, congrats to Minnesota. That's the last bowl game, but there's still two games remaining that we need to preview. The semifinals, the first ever expanded college football playoff. You got one SEC team that used to be a Big 12 team from last year. You've got two traditional Big 10 teams and one independent in Notre Dame. So let's preview both of those, starting with the Thursday game where we have
Penn State Nittany Lions.
Rawr. 4:30 p.m. in ESPN in the Orange Bowl. The number 7 Notre Dame Fighting Irish, give me my pot of gold, taking on number 6 Penn State. Penn State is a 1.5-point dog against Notre Dame.
Basically a pick 'em.
Basically a pick 'em. This is a, again, we've talked about Big Game James, right, and his inability to win big games in big moments against, and this is the important part,
quality,
against a real P4 elite team. He's done it against Boise State, right? That was a big game.
SMU.
Against SMU. But that's not the same thing we're talking about here. It's a different deal. This is, I think, the best team he's had at Penn State. But Notre Dame, after losing to Northern Illinois early this year, they really changed and got a whole lot better pretty quickly after that. And if you watched their game against Georgia, they controlled that thing and looked dominant at times against the Bulldogs. So for those who haven't watched a lot of Notre Dame, offensively, they're fine. I mean, I think they've gotten better over the course of the year. I think their quarterback has looked better as the year has gone on. Early on, he did not look super comfortable. He's gotten better. Defensively, that's where they make their money. Really good pass defense. Pretty good rush defense, but really, really good pass defense. Penn State, we all know, pretty balanced team. Pretty good defense and a very, very good offense. They're good running. They're good throwing. I kind of like the matchup for Penn State here.
Okay.
I'm going a lot on personnel here because Big Game James does give me pause. And I think Marcus Freeman. I think he's shown a lot this year. I think he was motivated by me calling for his firing earlier this year. He's shown a lot this year. I thought he did some good things that were like positive for his team on the sideline against Georgia. But if I'm just going by matchups, I think there's an advantage for Penn State in the run game against Notre Dame. Like, I think they're going to be able to run the ball. I think Nicholas Singleton and Catron Allen are at their kind of peak performance right now. And I think that's a really good thing to be able to ride in a playoff game where nerves are high. You know who doesn't get affected by nerves too much? A running back. You know who does? A quarterback.
Yeah.
And if you can lean on the run game, which I expect Penn State to be able to do, even against a good, stout Notre Dame defense, it's just they're not great against the run. They're good. They're not great. So I think this will be relatively low scoring, but I like Penn State. Ooh. 21-17.
I'm going to go with you on this. I'll put you down here for Penn State. This is a little concern because, you know, James Franklin did get to play sort of the non-logo games. They weren't the helmet. You know, SMU, Boise State aren't. That's not a Alabama or a Notre Dame. or Ohio State or things like that. We want to see James Franklin beat a team like that when it matters. Two big wins, obviously, to make the semifinal. It's great. 13 wins, first time ever. I mean, we're going to see teams with a lot more wins than we've ever seen before, just because there's, you know, four extra games potentially at the end of the season. Notre Dame, though, you know, to beat Georgia, that's a logo. That's a game. I mean, they beat the snot out of them too.
Yep.
That's the concerning part for me, that could Notre Dame just come in and we're like, hey, we are built like these big boys. Penn State, you're close, but you're not quite there. There's a little bit of thought in my head that could be the case, but I've been impressed with what they've been able to do. And I'm going to go with you on this for Penn State as well. There's, you know, I think Warren is going to be the best player on the field. And if you can lean on that, you can use him in some unique ways. I think that, you know, he could have a big impact. If he does, I think that, you know, Penn State's going to win this game. I got to see both these teams in person, both in the Coliseum, both beat USC. I think they were both about the same as far as impression, you know, how impressed I was. Notre Dame got a little lucky at the end of the game with two pick sixes, but whatever. I mean, the fact that they didn't turn Jaden Maiava over the whole game until the very end, maybe a little concerning. Penn State sort of got down against USC early and then turned it on. I thought they looked maybe a little better than Notre Dame. So I got to see both these teams up close this year. I think it will be a good game. Probably the hardest one to pick of the playoffs, because I think the spread's about right. It's going to be kind of pick them. But I'll take Penn State in the points. Point and a half here. We did have a comment. Tony, how many players from Penn State are injured? Seems like a lot. Abdul Carter is going to play. Jeremiah Love, I think, is going to play.
Did he say definitively he's going to play, Abdul Carter? I think they said game time decision.
The latest headline I saw that he was going to play, so maybe not.
Franklin's really cagey about this stuff. Okay. I read his quote from yesterday, and it said essentially he's done everything possible to play. He's worked really hard, but he's going to be a game time decision. But I think it was relatively optimistic that he was going to try to play.
Yeah. I think Notre Dame has some bigger injuries too, but they've overcome those.
If Love is limited at all, that's a big factor.
Yeah,
I think this is going to be a game a lot about the running game. I think Riley Leonard, his ability to, you know, make plays with his legs is going to be huge.
He's looked really good with some of this stuff.
But I think it's going to be a lot on the ground. I could see just like nerves being very high for both teams. They haven't been in this spot, you know, regularly. This is not. So it's I could just see it being kind of a mess passing wise, especially early on. So I think it's going to have to rely a lot on those guys pounding the rock.
The running situation is going to be interesting. But if you watched Notre Dame against Georgia, like Riley Leonard, they called plays for him to run. And this wasn't the kind of Georgia defense that we saw from like 2 years ago. How much can Penn State shut that down? Because that was a way to extend drives all the time, where you're running plays and stuff, and then it's like, oh, we'll just have Riley Leonard run for it. And he would. And they would pick up the first down and move the chains. I kind of think Penn State can do a little bit better job with their front seven against what Notre Dame was doing than what Georgia did, which is a little concerning. Like, I mean, they kind of pushed Georgia around. But it's not – you look at Georgia, but it's not the team that had four first-round draft picks on the defensive line from a couple of years ago. It's a little bit different. They had a lot more success than I think you would want. So if they can keep doing that, if Riley Leonard can just move the chains with his legs, and he's been really effective doing that and I think got better all season – I think Penn State's going to be in trouble, but I think Penn State's going to do a better job of slowing that down.
Yeah.
All right. So we're both going to agree on this one. We have one game left, and it's the number 8 seeded.
The Ohio State Buckeyes.
4:30 p.m. on Friday, ESPN Cotton Bowl. The number 8 Ohio State Buckeyes taking on number 5 Texas Longhorns. What do we do for that one?
Some kind of cow thing.
Just moo? Is that what I do?
Yeah, moo. I think. Well, it's more of a
husky moo. Moo.
That's like a chill moo.
I think like
Moo.
Well, that's better. It's like a chain smoker cow. Yeah. I like that. That's
you
good.
Like that one?
I just finished watching Yellowstone, so you like see a lot of cow stuff.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Ohio State's a 5.5-point favorite. They're obviously the favorite at this point to win it all. They're an 8 seed. That makes sense. wow. Okay. I think Ohio State blows them out. Let me just start there.
All right. So you're picking Ohio State.
Yeah. If they continue playing the way they are right now, no one is beating them.
No.
Right?
I think it's the Chip Kelly factor, you know?
Yeah, and I don't think anyone's coming close to beating them. I was not impressed with Sark in round one. His team, I think, displayed some mental softness, especially in the second half, which I think those kinds of things that are sort of ephemeral, hard to pin down, I think I generally attribute those to the head coach, to like the culture and stuff, and they just looked like they got very tight. Which reminds me of Sark. Sark seems like he gets tight in big moments. And they allowed ASU back in that game.
Yeah.
With just really tight play, bad decisions late, not running out the clock, trying to, you know, just trying to get a little too clever or whatever it was. Wasn't impressed with them. I'm not overly impressed with Ryan Day either. Ohio State just has a shitload, sorry Griffin, more talent. And I know that's a crazy thing to say because Texas has a ton of talent. They have a ton of talent. But Ohio State has, you know, three NFL receivers at receiver. The throws Will Howard was making in that last game are stuff, you know, just ridiculous. If he plays like that, you're not going to beat them. Their defense is insane. Their defensive line is crazy. Their linebacker play is crazy. Their speed in the secondary is crazy. It's just so hard to beat them. It's so hard to design a game plan to beat them on that end. And then you factor in if their offense plays like that, if Chip Kelly is calling a game with the intent of actually winning the game and not proving some point to somebody who wrote about him in the NFL 7 years ago, it's just so hard to beat them. You know, if they come out throwing the way they did, in their last game, like if they decide they're going to come out and throw the ball to Jeremiah Smith, how's Texas covering him? How's anybody covering him?
No.
So as long as they decide to play this like essentially like video game football, where if the other team can't defend your guy, you just keep doing that over and over and over again until they quit and concede the game. Now that doesn't happen in real football. There is no quitting and conceding. But I think you could see a lot of quitting on this field by the second half. I've got Ohio State by like 3 touchdowns.
I'm going to agree with you here. The feeling, this is what I picked Ohio State from the very beginning to win the national championship. They lose the close one to Oregon. Of course, losing to Michigan was like, what are you doing? But since then, they've looked like the team that we thought they could be. I think in the Michigan game, it sort of looked like they were trying to prove a point and we're tough and we can run the ball against you. And this is a team that just needs to throw. I mean, they have talented running backs, but this is a throw to set up the run kind of team. And we're finally seeing them do that. You can't cover all of these wide receivers. And once you do that, it opens everything else up. It was sort of like if you remember watching Tim Tebow. He just, because he could take off and run, you had to protect against that. And then he could throw ducks to whoever, and they were wide open because you weren't covering all those guys. One thing just opened up the other. And in this case, the throwing passing game is just going to open things up for the very talented run game. And I think the offensive line has played better. They moved, they've got a lot of guys around. They're looking a lot better. But just to be able to throw to Jeremiah Smith, who talked a lot of mess before that game and then backed it up and they couldn't do anything with him. That was 34. Was it 34 nothing in the first half? Like,
yeah,
insane. Texas, you know, defense is very good. They did such a good job against Arizona State in the red zone until they didn't. And then sort of the floodgates opened a little bit. There was some weird stuff happening in that game, but I agree with you mentally. They could have been blowing Arizona State out. Like Ohio State would have destroyed Arizona State on that day, mm-hmm. the way they're playing. And the feeling I got, do you remember when we were like the middle of the season and we would just play this?
He knows the score. He gets the women.
Cignetti kills.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, yes, yes, Indiana's going to cover against Michigan State or whoever the hell they were playing. I feel like the same way here is that, like, you've seen it, but are you believing it yet? Like, are you believing that Ohio State is a freaking juggernaut right now and they're just going to roll you? Texas has a lot of talent, and weird stuff can happen. But I think it's much more likely that Ohio State rolls in this one and you get another non-competitive game.
I'd feel better. So I don't think talent alone can win games. I think the big point with Indiana was they were clearly being elevated by their coach. I think the thing with this one is I just don't think Sark is that guy. Like, if they were lining up this week against, you know, Kirby Smart or James Franklin or whatever, and notwithstanding their previous results, but like if they were lining up against a coach who I had, like, I don't know, a little bit more confidence in, I would feel like, okay, Texas might have enough talent to make this interesting if they scheme it the right way. I just, with the way Ohio State is playing and my lack of confidence in Sark as like just a general like strategist, tactician, whatever you want to call it, I think also just like my lack of confidence in him as like an emotional leader for a team. Like, I don't really see it from him. I think he's kind of, you know, he's going to recruit well enough there, and he seems to have put his personal demons behind him, which is great. And I'm, you know, that's really positive, but I just don't see an elite coach there. I think to beat this level of Ohio State team, you need to be a really good coach. And I just think Sark is fine. He's fine, and he'll win a lot of games at Texas, but he's not going to win a title.
Kyle said Texas has a home game here. Yeah, this is played in Arlington. Matthew points out Texas's best win was Arizona State, and it was in double overtime. And that's true, too. That, you know, they played a real team in Georgia who's not really that real. They lost to them twice. I would have Ohio State as a big favorite over Georgia right now. Texas couldn't get over the Georgia hump. That's a, you know, talent wise, you're talking similar, but like well coached. I feel like that's what you got here. But Ohio State's more talented than
nobody's Georgia. More talented than Ohio State this year.
And obviously Chip Kelly, you know, being the
he's been doing well lately.
He has.
I mean, I think he's a worthless piece of shit. But sorry, Griffin. But he's been doing well lately.
Yeah. Tony points out Texas beat Michigan. Yes. That's also true, but this is a different thing. So we'll see.
Are you feeling some harshness in your throat right now?
Little.
Yeah, I think we're getting it right now.
You think I'm getting a little?
No, I think we're getting the
air matter. Yeah, I think that's probably it.
Yeah.
I did see Arash tweeted out. Have you ever been to Moon Shadows in Malibu?
Yeah.
Gone. What the hell?
Yeah.
All these cool places that So if you're not from here, like where we're in the South Bay, like Malibu seems like it's, you know, days away, but it's, you know, whatever, 45 minutes, an hour or something up Pacific Coast Highway. And it's kind of cool. Do a weekend outing up there. There's cool stuff. You know, the Pepperdine is up there, but there's cool like restaurants and bars and things on the on PCH and all these expensive homes and everything. So not something I go to all the time. David goes hiking up there sometimes.
Yeah.
Just bizarre to see those places gone. Like, so just terrible. All right. Well, why don't we do this? Let's take a quick break. We don't have much for questions, but we'll get back to them in a second. So back in a minute, everyone. All righty. We're back here on the podcast of champions. If you're watching us live on YouTube, thank you very much. If you have any questions, put them in there. I start a couple of them. We could get back to, I think do we have one email, David?
Let me see.
I think it's Frank. Is that the only one?
Wait, what about this, the parody one? Did we do that one?
Which one's the parody?
The text before that.
Did we?
No, we did do it.
I think we did do it.
Yeah. All right. It's just Frank. And Frank rarely even asks a question. So
there's probably not a question.
All right. Yeah. Book him, Dano. This is from Frank in Sacramento. It's time we stop calling Dan Lanning a great coach. Kalen DeBoer beat him three times in close games in 2022 and 2023, where Oregon had a huge talent advantage over Washington. Lanning too often got tricked into going for it on fourth down and lost all three games by 3 points. Lanning's team squeaked by Ohio State at home in October 2024 when the Ohio State quarterback screwed up his clock management. Ohio State then blew out Oregon in the rematch in the recent neutral site playoff game. Great opponents outcoach him regularly. Lanning does not deliver in spite of all the talent Phil Knight and Nike send his way. This is putting it all a little strong, and frankly, I think you've got it. Frank, I'm going to say this frankly as a friend. I think you've got it ass backwards.
Oh.
Against Washington, literally each time he was making the right choice when he was deciding whether or not to go for it on fourth down. Now, with a gimpy Bo Nix, do you want to call, I think it was a quarterback draw that one time? No, probably not. Yeah. Probably want to call a different play. But the decision to go for it was absolutely 100% the right decision. I actually think he might have learned some wrong lessons because he was far too conservative at the beginning of this Ohio State game. Far too conservative.
Yeah.
And so my worry is that he has carried a little too much baggage from those losses. Because the thing with making the positive math choice, the positive statistical choice, the positive percentage choice is, unless it's a 100% decision, you know what happens? There's a possibility that you will not be rewarded for making the right decision. Mm. It happens. And you know what can happen? It can happen three times in a row. But it still doesn't make it the wrong decision. Don't be results-oriented. Be process-oriented. Dan Lanning's process was very good. It's been very good. I did not like it against Ohio State. I thought he was outcoached in that game in the playoff. But in the regular season, I mean, that was situational coaching that actually was a huge advantage for Oregon. I mean, the reason he screwed up the clock management, the Ohio State quarterback, had a lot to do with how Oregon played those final seconds. So, no, I still think Dan Lanning's a very good coach. Would I take him over Kenny Dillingham at this point? No. Denny Killingham is my new guy. But yeah. Lane Danning's still like top five.
He's up there. Yeah. I mean, he has a big part of that talent acquisition too. Yes, he has unlimited funds, but you have to recruit hard. And his staff does that. They bring in the talent.
They were undefeated this year. They lost one game to a team that is playing like a Death Star right now.
Yeah. So that's tough. So I wouldn't put all that on Lane Danning. But yeah, I don't know. We'll see. Like Oregon's, they got to try to break through. It's an amazing season. You're number one all year. You're super relevant. Everyone's talking about you. And then you get absolutely destroyed by, like David said, there's a Death Star, a team that you already beat.
Yeah.
I think he did coach a little, like it's sort of like you knew, you saw, like he played this team already and he saw what they were like. And then he saw this and was sort of like, ruh-roh.
Oh, there's no way we're beating this.
Yeah, like ruh-roh. Yeah. Like this is not good. But in that case, you need to be more like not. We better like kick a field goal here instead of like we got to try to do something.
Look, from like a calculation standpoint, like anything he did was probably not going to be worth. Like it's probably not going to work out. And so I think he was like maybe just hoping that his defense would wake up and play better. But the reality is, you got to know what game you're in, and in that game. You know what he needed to do? He needed to have his offense play a lot better, and then he needed to kick a couple of onside kicks because there was no stopping that Ohio State offense in that game.
Yeah.
And that's just – you got to realistically evaluate your secondary and say, hey, are we covering these guys today if they're actually going to throw to them? Probably not.
Yeah.
So let's go to plan B, which is we got to try to score 48 points, and whatever combination of factors needs to include us – scoring 48 points, that's what we need to put in place.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. So I think that was... Oh, by the way, this was an email. Somehow we get signed up for all kinds of spam stuff or whatever. We got something from Hellman's. So I wonder if it's because we're talking about Duke's Mayo. Hellman's sent us, and it's to Lincoln. So is there someone trolling us that calling it, think that, you know, registering us as Lincoln Riley?
That's beautiful.
But we got a Hellman's email, so I thought that was kind of funny.
Great.
Yeah, like whatever. Okay, a couple of starred comments in the chat. Let me pull these up for you from Tony. Completely off topic. With both of you living in California, this may be a stupid question. Do the authorities drop or spray salt water on fires?
I don't know. I would imagine so.
So if you watch, they have different assets like helicopters with like big buckets, and they also have a couple of like they're like
scoop planes.
Yeah, planes that scoop up. I think typically it's from like lakes and not necessarily from the ocean, but like for the Palisades, if they have those opportunities, you can probably. I don't know that they wouldn't do saltwater if there's a reason you wouldn't. But I don't recall seeing it. It's usually like from lakes and stuff. A lot of the fires, you know, are more inland too. But
yeah, usually you don't. I don't know what they do with the Malibu fires though. Usually,
yeah, that could be.
But good question, Tony.
Kyle says, "This is probably for you." Oh, it says it is for you. Do you trust Chip or Sark more?
Oh, God. Neither. I mean, I don't trust either of them. I don't trust Chip to not come out with a game plan that's just like this avant-garde bullshit. Like, it could... Sorry, Griffin. It could be like, okay, you know what we're going to do today? We're going to come out in the wing tee. And that's just what they do all game, or at least for like heavy portions of it. And it's just like, oh, okay, it's a Chip bullshit game, not a real game.
We'll have Jeremiah Smith as the fullback or something.
Yeah, no. We're coming out of Full House the entire game. It's going to be just... pure Full House, flex bone, nothing but the flex bone. So you can't trust him. I just don't trust Sark. Like, I trust him to design a game plan intending to win the game. I trust him to want to win the game. I trust him, you know, that I just don't know if he's got the chops. I don't know if he's got the juice. I don't know if he's got the, like, you know, that winner's edge. I when I watch Sark, like, it, just his whole vibe, he gives me like a real try hard pretender vibe where he's like there's that one clip of him pregame, I think it was last year in a game, where he's like so tense getting ready to come out of the tunnel, and then the guy puts his hand on him to like stop him from, you know, getting too far out because they're trying to hold it for TV or something. And he flips out, loses his mind on him. And it's just like, this is, it's like you're trying to be that guy, but you're not actually. It's very strange to watch, but he just doesn't look comfortable in his own skin.
Yeah.
And when I see, you know, and that, again, speaks to all the other stuff going on with Sark. But when I see that, I worry about him second guessing himself constantly at endgame situations and not being decisive, because being decisively wrong is better than being indecisive in critical moments. He just strikes me as a guy who's just not fully cut out to be elite at this thing. And I think it, you know, might make him a, you know, a more functional human being in some ways, but you got to have a little bit more of the hyper-competitive sociopath in you, and I don't know that he does.
All right. We got a one from Colt. I put it up on the screen for you guys if you're watching live on YouTube. Thank you. Would you both be in favor of making the Rose Bowl the championship game every year?
I'm not a Rose Bowl fetishist, so I don't care. It does not matter to me at all. I think, you know, and if you're sticking the Rose Bowl in like mid-January for the fetishist, is that a thing? Like, who cares about it? Like, it's supposed to be a New Year's Day thing, right?
Yeah, I kind of like it. I mean, I would be cool with having it there, but like an extra game, like still having the Rose Bowl and then having the championship game there, something would be kind of cool.
I mean, it's a really old stadium that's just a big old concrete bowl with, you know, a lot of bad seating. Like, I don't know.
Do you know there's like San Gabriel Mountains, though, and the sun sets over
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I mean, look, Washington is pretty scenic, too. Should we have it up at Husky Stadium?
No, but this is, it's a Rose Bowl, dude. Come on.
Yeah, but this is what I'm talking about, the fetishism. Like, it's fine. It's a fine place to watch a game. But like, we get it one time a year on January 1st, and that's cool. Like, do you need it twice? And if you're not talking about doing it twice, the Rose Bowl's not going to agree to it anyway. They're not going to do it on January 17th or whatever the hell.
Yeah, they don't like that. Well, I mean, the Rose Bowl, we got a traditional matchup this year, but the Pac-12 doesn't exist, so they're not going to be able to do that anymore. We got one last one, unless anyone else has something. This might be tough to do. Kyle, top five quarterbacks in the Big Ten next season.
Oh, boy.
So, like, that's really tough because, like, if you look at some of the guys that came in, it's been a lot of transfers that have had success. So,
All right, so who even is going to be Oregon's quarterback next year?
Yeah, see, we don't even, like, whoever that is will probably
Quinn
be
Ewers?
One.
Who knows?
Yeah, like it's not Dante Moore, right?
I mean, he has a chance, I guess, but yeah. Washington, Damond Williams, he might be up there.
He could, yeah. So we know him.
USC, is it really going to be Jaden Maiava?
Probably him, but I don't think he'd be a top five quarterback.
No. UCLA, Joey Aguilar from Appalachian State? I don't know.
Yeah.
Nebraska, Dylan Raiola, we know him. Maybe. Maybe he grows a lot. He's a very talented kid. He'll be a sophomore next year, and he'll have an offensive system that's probably better in Holgorsen's system. Iowa, I don't think we fully know what their quarterback situation is going to be.
They went after – no, they got the didn't they get the North – they got the North Dakota State guy.
Did Iowa?
Yeah, I believe they got him.
We got it. So we'll – just so everyone knows, so we don't sound completely ignorant forever, we'll start to do recruiting roundups with all these different schools in the coming weeks. We'll bring on some recruiting experts to talk about it all. But I mean, just going through it, there's still so much uncertainty about it.
Most of the big, it's like, you got to look for the big programs, like who's going to be Ohio State's quarterback. Like,
yeah.
So he'll probably be one of the top five, whoever that guy is, you know, cause he's throwing to Jeremiah Smith. So if David Woods transfers to Ohio State, I'm going to put him in the top five.
Yeah. Drew Aller's returning, right?
I think he said he would. Yeah. So he would probably be up there.
Yeah. So if Drew Aller returns, I think he's up there. I mean, he was already up there this year. But yeah, I mean, Ohio State's going to have a new quarterback. They'll probably, you know, it's
like Michigan will have a new quarterback. Like everyone's going to have a new quarterback. Like it's just sort of the way things work.
Yep.
So I think that's very, South Dakota State. It's not North Dakota State. It's the South Dakota State.
Yeah, Fernando Mendoza's, as Tony points out, he's at Indiana now too.
Yeah, yeah. So
and in that system, Fernando Mendoza could rock.
Yeah, but I think when you're traditionally answering that kind of question, it's because, this guy is in year three, and you know, it's like, and he's learned so much, and we expect him to take a big step forward. Like, it's just hardly the case. Like, you get a Dylan Raiola where, like, the freshman starts. If he has, like, a bad year, he might transfer out. Anyway, you know, who the heck knows? So it's tough. We don't have the retention is just not there. There's just so impact one-year dudes coming in, and that's sort of how this rolls, you know? That's why I think it was kind of fun to have the Heisman you know, winner be someone that was, you know, like at Colorado for a couple of years. Yes, he transferred from Jackson State. But Ashton Jeanty, you know, spent his career at Boise State. You know, that's it's just that's the way it's going to be with the quarterback spot. Like it's hard to have like a third or fourth year guy that's been there and performing at a high level for a long time. It just doesn't do that. Drew Aller's one of them, though. So I think that's an example. Minnesota will have a redshirt freshman. Yikes. So Max Brosmerd's gone. He's done. Is that his? Okay. Cool. Well, good stuff. I don't have anything else.
I have nothing else. I am spent. I am juiced. I am fully gone.
Juiced?
Juiced. I've been juiced. I've been squeezed.
I was squeezed yesterday.
Yeah. You were more scooped.
Scooped. I'm cleared out.
Yeah.
I got to eat more fiber, they said.
Oh. It was like a little rough. There were like nooks and crannies in there.
There's some nooks and crannies, I think. Yeah. Shit, I forget there's a term for it.
You should get the pictures.
Really?
You want to see your insides? Yeah, go check them out.
Not really. When you're like, you go in there before they knock you out, like there's the monitor there. I'm like, oh, that's where they're going to be looking. It's kind of weird. I was out like pretty quick. They're like, put the thing on your face, the mask. And they're like,
oh, it's amazing how quick it happens.
And then she's like, yeah, just tell me, you know, just when you start, I'm like, okay, I'm starting to feel a little bit. And then you feel like there's going to be this gradual thing. And then I don't remember anything else till waking up. And it was like, it wasn't.
No, and it's so weird. I've only done it once. I had to get my wisdom teeth out a few years ago as a grown up. And it's so weird because it's not like you're asleep. You're just gone and then you're immediately back, but it's an hour later.
Yeah.
It's like, huh, okay.
It's the, was it Propofol, whatever what's the Michael Jackson drugs? The fentanyl stuff? Like, is that?
Yeah, is that, I don't know.
Yeah, that's what, like, they kind of knock you out. And it's like, oh. It was kind of cool. But I'm back. I'm back, baby.
You're back.
That's going to wrap it up, though.
Yep.
He is David Woods. Do we want to pose for anything?
No, not really.
You want to do that?
Sure.
And I'm Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. And we will talk to you next time.
Bye.